Okay, stand by.
3, 2, 1. Okay, good morning everybody. This is about 2:31 and it's just a little bit loud. Maybe I'll turn it down just a little bit so it doesn't blow up. This is October 10th and we're going to start a new chapter today, Endocrine System. That's chapter 17. I've got one projector, so let's look on the right-hand side for everything that I'm going to show you today. And our next exam is October 19th. It's going to cover 10, 11, right, which are muscles, and then an introductory chapter to nervous system, which we'll get to next time, as well as 17, which is the endocrine system. All right, so nervous system and endocrine system work together really nice because they're involved with controlling various parts of your body. One is fast and can travel long distances, but its duration is relatively short in terms of control. The other control system takes a little bit longer to develop, but it's more long-lasting. All right, so if you think of those two ways, which one is the fast one that can control very distant parts of your body very rapidly, but is short-lived? Which one is that, do you think? Nervous system or endocrine system? That's going to be the nervous system, right? The endocrine system is the other one that can control distant parts of your body, can coordinate your body, but usually it takes a little while for that to happen, but the duration of action is much longer. So that's why we need both of them. One is fast, one is slow. One will last for only a short period of time, the other will last for a long period of time. So those are some things we're going to look at. All right, so that is on a Wednesday. Also, what we're doing in lab this time is lab number 8. Next time we have a review, and then on the 24th, which is what, before or after the next lecture test? It's after the next lecture test, you have practicum number 3. All right, so we have a review session next week for that, which is a godsend. That is a fantastic thing. All right, so don't forget exam number 3, the 19th, coming up. So some people had questions about the study guide for chapter 17, which is the endocrine system. So let me pull this over here. Here's your familiar Blackboard website. And so I think the exam study guides are under documents. So let's go under documents and then lecture exam study guides folder. And then here is the typical exam study guide for 3. This contains most of the chapters except for 17. I didn't append it to this one and republish it. So here is the study guide for chapter 17 right here, which you can download, right? So 231 exam 3, chapter 17 study guide with exam figures. This study guide right here has some end of chapter questions that I like, some check your concepts questions in the middle of the chapter, but no online questions. But there are a couple of exam figures in there that you want to take a look at before the exam. All right, so it's just slightly abbreviated compared to some of the other chapters. All right, anybody have a question on the schedule or the study guide for 17? I can put these things away. All right, so what are we going to look at today? What are we going to check out the big black letters? It is what? Endocrine system. All right, so let's start with endocrine system. Unless there's a question around, anybody have a question? I think all your grades should be updated in Blackboard, all your quiz grades, practicum grades, lecture exam grades, but you can see me during your lab if you have a question about those. Okay, so the endocrine system is composed of certain kinds of glands that we call ductless glands. And remember, what were the two main classifications of glands? Endocrine and exocrine. That's right. So now we're getting to the endocrine system. So recall that an exocrine gland is a gland that has a duct. An endocrine gland is a gland that's producing a product and secreting that product, but not into a duct. It just secretes it into the extracellular space. And those products, right, are special signaling or messenger molecules that we call hormones. So a hormone is secreted by an endocrine gland. So it's going to travel to some distant site in your body. How does it get from the gland that secretes it to some distant site in your body to coordinate all different aspects of your body, whether it's metabolism or growth or other kinds of functions. How does it get there? Yeah, it doesn't travel via a nerve or a duct, doesn't travel like part of the nervous system, doesn't travel through a duct like an exocrine secretion would. It gets absorbed by the circulatory system, in particular a capillary. And once it's in your circulatory system, where does it go? Everywhere your blood goes. It goes throughout your body, and then it can leave another capillary bed into the extracellular space, and it can affect various kinds of tissues, right? As long as those tissues have a receptor for that particular hormone messenger molecule. If a cell doesn't have a receptor, then it's going to be completely blind. It's going to be completely unaware of that messenger molecule that's being sent to it. Okay. So anything that has a receptor is what we call a target tissue. And once the hormone binds to that target tissue or the receptor in that target tissue, it's going to change the behavior of those cells. It's going to change the physiology of those cells. So we say it's going to elicit some kind of specific response that is really only triggered by that particular hormone molecule. All right, so there are a number of important kinds of concepts that you should be aware of in terms of the endocrine system or what a hormone is. A hormone is secreted by what kind of gland? A ductless gland. Right, and that hormone travels throughout your whole body through the circulatory system, where it's going to change the response of a target tissue. So it's going to change the physiology of some kind of tissue in your body, but only if that target tissue has what? It's got to have a receptor, right? And without a receptor, then that tissue cannot be a target tissue. It won't be able to sense that signaling molecule. Right, just like your eyes have receptors. What do your eyes have receptors for? For light, that's right. So if you had a nice eyeball, but you didn't have photoreceptors in the eye, you would not be able to perceive light, right? You would be blind as a result of that. Okay, so what's the function of the endocrine system? It regulates relatively, what, slow or fast processes? Slow processes, right, not fast. Things like growth. Like, how long did it take you to grow up? I know, you're going to say, I'm still growing. Indeed you are. We are still all growing, but in at least the major ways that we grow, right, it took you a decade or more, 15, 16, 17, 18, maybe 20 years. As a matter of fact, our brains are still growing, thank goodness. All right, regulates metabolism, regulates the reproductive system, blood chemistry, and even immune response. So the endocrine system is important in all those different respects. All right, here's a list of important endocrine glands. This is kind of a short list. We've got a pituitary, pineal, thyroid, adrenal. But even more importantly, since this is anatomy, you should know more than just a list. You should actually know where some of these endocrine systems are. So here is an exam figure that shows where some of the important endocrine glands are. And what can you tell me about these endocrine glands? How do they get their product throughout the whole body? Circulatory system, not via a duct. Okay? So starting up here in the brain, we've got the pineal gland in the posterior part of the brain, and then we got the pituitary gland right here, which is more anterior, right at the base of the brain. And then here's an important one that's actually part of the brain called the hypothalamus. And the hypothalamus controls the pituitary gland, and then the pituitary gland can control other glands. For instance, like the thyroid gland, which is in your neck. There are some glands embedded within the thyroid gland called the parathyroids, and some other glands within the thyroid, so we're going to visit that area. Oh, you see this little nodule here and little nodule here? These are the parathyroid glands here and here. They're mostly posterior. All right, thymus. Now, how would you describe the location of the thymus? It's not embedded within muscle. I'll give you a hint. It's in a cavity. Check out what cavity that is. What cavity is that? Right there. What cavity does that look like? I hear a lot of... Thoracic is pretty good. I couldn't say no. But let's think of a cavity that's a little bit smaller, a little bit more particular to this location. Ah, mediastinum, I heard. I like that, mediastinum. And as a matter of fact, if you want to say superior mediastinum, that's fine with me. But mediastinum, along with a bunch of great blood vessels right there. Then moving down into the abdominal cavity, we've got the pancreas. That's also an important digestive organ. It also is part exocrine because there's a duct that goes over to the small intestine. But it's also an important endocrine gland involved with helping regulate blood glucose levels. Do you think that's important? Have you ever heard of anybody that has difficulty regulating blood glucose levels? What's that disease process called?
Diabetes
mellitus. Yeah, very common disease. Very prevalent and increasing in our population. Adrenal glands are above the kidneys. I can see the kidneys right here. Adrenal means on top of the kidneys, on top of the renal glands. And then down over here, we've got some gonads. Male gonad is a testes. Female gonad is ovary. The job of these gonads right here is a couple fold. They secrete additional hormones, but they also produce gametes, which is a human cell that has half the number of chromosomes that can join with another gamete of the opposite sex to form a whole human individual with the right number of chromosomes, right? So the male gamete right here is typically what we call, give me an example of the male gamete, the name, as sperm, and the female gamete is an egg, and remember only the sperm can swim around. Swarm is a combination of sperm and swimming. And the egg right here, right, is not motile. It can't move around on its own. Doesn't have a flagellum like the sperm does. All right, so here's a really good exam figure that you should know. All right, what else do we got right here? Oh, some other. I'm glad I looked at my cheat sheet. Some other things that are endocrine glands that secrete hormones. And we might talk about some of these in this class, if not, certainly in a physiology class. The heart secretes a hormone called atrial natriuretic hormone. I don't know if you have to know that unless it's on the list someplace. Digestive tract secretes various hormones. The kidney secretes a hormone that regulates red blood cell production. And the skin even secretes hormones. All right, most glands are of epithelial origin. Right, but some can be derived from neurons or muscle cells or other kinds of tissues, but most are epithelial tissue. All right, some classes of hormones. Some are amino acids. And what can you tell me about amino acids? Before, we haven't talked about them. Oh, have we? Yeah, a little bit. We talked about them. Because what do you need amino acids to make? They're the building blocks of proteins. And I think we talked about protein synthesis. Remember, transcription, translation. So for translation, the cells need amino acids to make a protein. But so some hormones are made up of very few amino acids, could be maybe 5 or 6 or 8 or maybe a little bit more. And then there's another class called steroids. Right? And these are all derived from cholesterol. Some important steroids would be, for instance, testosterone and estrogen. And since they're derived from cholesterol, what can you tell me about cholesterol? Good or bad? Okay, it could be bad if it's too high, but if you're devoid of cholesterol, then you can't make any of these steroid hormones. All right, and of course, that would not be good. Okay, so control of hormone secretion. How are these different hormones secreted? Let me see if I had any slides to show you about this. No? Okay. Humoral. All right, this is the simplest kind of endocrine control mechanism. That means that the endocrine gland secretes in direct response to a changing chemical composition of your body. Maybe ions are changing, right? Or nutrient levels in the blood. A good example of a nutrient would be glucose. If glucose goes too low, right? Or if glucose goes too high, probably some of you might be familiar with this. If glucose goes too high, what hormone does your body secrete to bring it back down? Insulin in particular. Oh, bless you. Hope you feel better in a second. I hate it when you start coughing. Okay, but now what the heck is an ion? We haven't talked about an ion in here because we don't talk much about chemistry, but guess what class we talk about ions a lot in? Like physiology, yeah. So what the heck is an ion? Anybody have an idea what an ion is? Yeah. Yeah, so it's some kind of chemical compound in your body that has an electrical charge on it. And some compounds are just elements, just a single atom. And some of the examples of those would be sodium ions or potassium ions or chloride ions. And so the very fundamental nature of our body is very electrical because of these ions that are, allow our physiology to take place. And so hormones are involved in regulating these ion concentrations. Another name for ion inside our body is sometimes called an electrolyte. Electrolyte. And what do you hear in that word, electrolyte? You hear what? Electro, which means what? Electricity. Right? So we are very electrical. And electrolyte is just an ion that's in our body. So maybe some of you have heard this maybe in an emergency room or something. A physician says, we need some lights on this patient right away. What are they talking about? Are you going to go and get a flashlight and shine a light on there? What are they talking about? No, they need electrolyte concentration measurement. So you got to draw some blood and get that to the lab right away. Find out what their sodium and magnesium, calcium, potassium levels are. Because that's all very important. Okay, another example would be the parathyroid glands associated with the thyroid gland monitors and regulates calcium in your body. Okay, so this is what we call humeral. An example of humeral, right, is this slide right here. Probably an exam slide, but I'm not really sure. Here I see the thyroid gland. Here are the parathyroid glands, right? Capillary blood contains low concentration of calcium, right, which stimulates the parathyroid glands to release parathyroid hormones. So it's just the level of calcium in the blood that's flowing through these parathyroids right here. Right? Secretion of parathyroid hormone from the parathyroid glands acts to increase blood calcium. And where's the reservoir for calcium in your body? Bones. Right? So parathyroid hormone has a tendency to dissolve your bones to increase blood calcium because you need calcium for other kinds of things. Give me something that's important just besides bones where calcium is necessary. Muscle contraction. Synaptic transmission as well, which I think we haven't gotten to yet, but let the cat out of the bag. It's important for muscle contraction. And without muscle contraction, you couldn't even breathe, right? So muscle contraction is probably more important than having proper calcium levels in your bones. All right, so this is an example of humeral, meaning that calcium is acting as an agent that triggers the activity of the parathyroid glands. The second kind of control would be neural. And guess what that means? It needs a part of the nervous system in order for it to work. Like sympathetic nerve fibers stimulate cells of the adrenal medulla. And remember where the adrenals are from that previous slide? They're just right on top of the kidneys. And remember that a lot of organs have a superficial part and a deep part. What do we call the superficial part of an organ? The superficial part is the like cortical bone. Is what kind of bone? It's the superficial part, right? And medullary bone has a totally different structure. That's what? The deep part of the bone. And the adrenal gland has different parts. Then you can separate them out from being superficial and deep. And the adrenal medulla is what part of the medulla? I mean, what part of the adrenal gland? It's the inside. It's the deep part. Okay, which is different than the superficial part. Superficial part is endocrine gland as well. But there are sympathetic nerves that go to the adrenal that release epinephrine and norepinephrine. Another name for epinephrine is adrenaline. Have you heard of adrenaline before? What does that make you do? It makes you really jittery and nervous. It dilates your eyes, increases your heart rate, increases blood flow to your skeletal system so that you can perceive danger around you and react to it. It dilates airways in your lungs so that you can get air in and out of your lungs more efficiently. Like if all of a sudden I said you're going to have a test today that would cause this big surge of adrenaline and it would allow you to do what? Run out of the room in a hurry. Okay, just as a silly example. Okay, that would be a neuronal control. So the nice picture right here that shows neuronal control is here we have a nerve coming from the spinal cord, that's just a cross section of the spinal cord, goes all the way to the adrenal gland, kind of looks like a funny hat sitting right on top of the kidneys, and This right here, is this the medulla or the cortex? Adrenal cortex or adrenal medulla? Adrenal medulla, because it's the deep part. So this nerve causes the release of epinephrine and norepinephrine from these cells within the adrenal medulla. Okay. Catecholamines is just a fancy way of saying norepinephrine and epinephrine, which is just a fancy way of saying adrenaline and noradrenaline. But people usually don't say noradrenaline. They would just usually say adrenaline. All right, so this is an example of a nerve that's necessary for hormonal control. And then the last one is hormonal. This is very, very common in the body. So the stimulus is received from other endocrine glands, because what's the compound that's secreted by an endocrine gland? What do we call a product secreted directly into the blood by an endocrine gland? That would be a hormone, right? Okay. So certain hormones signal the secretion of other hormones, which then go into the blood, travel to some target tissue, and change the response of that target tissue, changes the physiology of that target tissue. But what does that target tissue have to have? It's got to have a receptor to a hormone. For instance, the hypothalamus, which is in the brain, secretes hormones, which travels by the blood to the pituitary, which causes the pituitary to secrete hormones, and then some of these hormones in the pituitary will go to other glands to cause them to secrete hormones. So this can be a little bit involved, but we'll talk about some of these things. All right. So what does that look like? Endocrine control. For instance, here is a hypothalamus, a part of the brain, releasing hormones that travel by. How does a hormone get to where it's going? Via blood, via the circulatory system. So there's a capillary in the hypothalamus that absorbs these hormones secreted by the hypothalamus. It takes this little blood vessel down into the anterior pituitary, where there's another capillary. These hormones then leave the blood, and then it stimulates these cells here to release additional hormones, which then get picked up by the blood and carried to the thyroid gland or adrenal cortex or to this gonad right here. So in order for these cells to respond to hypothalamic hormones or hormones from the hypothalamus, what do these cells need? What do these cells need in order to be able to sense these hormones from the hypothalamus? Even they're surrounding, all those hormones are surrounding these cells will be completely blind unless they have what? Receptors for them, right? Okay. And then these cells respond by producing additional hormones, which then help control these various organs right here. So this is a perfect example of what? Hormone stimulus or hormonal control. Okay. The pituitary gland secretes 9 major kinds of hormones. Right, and the pituitary gland is attached to the hypothalamus. Since this is anatomy, here's the hypothalamus, kind of at the base of the brain. We're going to start looking at this in about 2 weeks. Here is the pituitary, but we've talked about the pituitary before because it's housed in a special little depression or bowl or fossa in the sphenoid bone. Can anybody remember what that little part of the sphenoid bone is? All right, you haven't seen the pituitary, but that little sphenoid bone, that depression at the base of the brain is called the sella turcica. Is that ringing a bell? That's where this pituitary gland is. And this little bridge between the hypothalamus and the pituitary gland is called the infundibulum, or sometimes it's called the pituitary stalk. And you can see that it contains some important blood vessels for control of the anterior pituitary. All right, it has 2 basic divisions. It's got the adenohypophysis, or the anterior lobe, and also the neurohypophysis, right, which is the posterior lobe. So here is anterior. This is the anterior pituitary, and then here is the posterior pituitary gland. This is kind of interesting because the posterior part of the pituitary, this is all pituitary gland right here, all pituitary. But you can see that the posterior pituitary is really an extension of the brain. Do you see that it has the same color as the brain? Yes or no? So here's hypothalamus, part of the brain. Is it the same color as the posterior pituitary? And it doesn't look like the same color to you guys. Does it? No? Oh. What color is this here? What color is this right here? brown, and what color is this right here? It's kind of orangey? Oh, that's right, sorry. It's getting weirded out because there's a blotch on the projector. Okay, well, it should be the same color. If you look in your books, it should be the same color. Posterior pituitary is part of the brain, but the anterior pituitary is really an epithelium. It came from a totally different part of the body. They merged together to form the pituitary gland. So these are really two separate glands controlled in two little different ways. Sorry about the blotch on there, but I'm really happy to have that blotch because at least we have one projector. Okay, anterior lobe. Let's consider the anterior lobe hormones first. All right, so the ones coming from the anterior pituitary, those are caused by secretions from the hypothalamus. Hypothalamus releases hormones that control the release of hormones from the anterior pituitary. So here is the list. Growth hormone. Sometimes we call that somatotropin. Stimulates what? Growth in your body. You need that to get big. People whose pituitary is not functioning during development will be very, very small, and they might actually elect to get some shots from a physician to help them grow a little bit bigger. All right, thyroid stimulating hormone is released from what? The anterior pituitary. Anterior pituitary. Guess where it goes? Guess where thyroid stimulating hormone goes? Comes from the anterior pituitary, but where does it go? What organ has receptors for it? It goes everywhere in the body, but the organ that has receptors is the thyroid gland. All right, there's another one, adrenal corticotropic hormone. A tropic hormone is a hormone that causes something to grow or to maintain itself. Without this, right, the adrenal, what part of the adrenal gland is going to regress? The adrenal cortex, right, the superficial part. So ACTH stimulates the adrenal cortex to secrete other hormones that help us cope with stress in our lives, like cortisols, for instance, cortisone-type molecules. Melanocyte-stimulating hormone from the anterior pituitary in humans, MSH, we think, functions to suppress appetite. All right, it might also help regulate maybe sleep cycles or something like that, but we're not really sure exactly what it's doing. Might change during our lifetime. And then gonadotropins. Again, what is a tropic hormone? A tropin is something that causes another endocrine gland to grow or to maintain itself. In particular, what kind of endocrine glands? What's a gonad? Give me an example of a gonad. Okay, testes. Give me another example of a gonad. Ovary. Okay. All right. So both males and females have gonads. They are a little bit different in their basic characteristics, right? But there are two gonadotropins that affect gonads. One is called follicle stimulating hormone, or FSH. In the male, that causes spermatogenesis along with some other hormones. All right, but in the female, it causes the development of a follicle, which will eventually produce what? An egg or an oocyte. So FSH is important in the production of gametes, whether they're male gametes or female gametes. It really doesn't matter. All right, luteinizing hormone is another hormone that comes from the anterior pituitary. In the male, it goes to the gonads because it's what? A gonadotropin. Right, and in the male, it stimulates the production and secretion of testosterone. That's a male sex hormone. Anybody have an idea what testosterone does for males? Gives us a nice deep voice compared to females. Because our larynx, our voice box is a little bit bigger, so it vibrates at a little bit lower frequency. Testosterone causes the closing over of the epiphyseal plates. Ooh, that's a blast from the past. Where's an epiphyseal plate? That's the junction between the distal epiphysis, right, and any of the epiphyses in the diaphysis, and that's how bone grows in length, right? And as testosterone is secreted, it causes those epiphyseal plates to ossify, stopping bone growth, at least in length, in males. And remember, males reach puberty at a little bit later stage in development, a little bit later on in life, and so typically males are typically a little bit taller as a result. Okay. Luteinizing hormone in the female doesn't cause testosterone secretion, right? But it causes ovulation, and it causes estrogen and progesterone secretion. So in females, there's a couple of different hormones in play. Males, it's just testosterone, but in females, it is both estrogen and progesterone. And luteinizing hormone causes the expulsion of the egg from the developing follicle. All right, so we're going to look at this in quite a bit more detail when we get to the reproductive chapter. So I just want you to know where some of these hormones come from. Prolactin, all right, causes the development of glandular tissue of the breast that's responsible for milk production. All right, so milk from the breast is produced by a gland, but now you got to tell me before we can leave class, what kind of gland is it? Is it an endocrine gland that produces milk or an exocrine gland that produces milk? All right, I like exocrine because it goes through a duct system and then finds its way to the exterior so that an infant can receive nutrition. All right, so these are all anterior lobe hormones. And in your book, you have a pretty good table that shows these things, kind of at the end of the chapter. Okay, these are some of the hormones that we looked at. Growth hormone, right, causes growth of bones and muscle. Thyroid stimulating hormone maintains the thyroid gland, and the thyroid gland then secretes a hormone. Some people have a thyroid gland that cannot make the hormone that the thyroid gland makes, which is called thyroid hormone or thyroxine. In which case, the anterior pituitary gets really worried and says, well, the thyroid gland isn't doing its job, so it secretes a lot of thyroid-stimulating hormones, so the thyroid gland starts to grow, and it gets really big, but it still doesn't produce a potent thyroid hormone, so that still bothers the anterior pituitary, so it releases more thyroid-stimulating hormones, so the thyroid gland even gets bigger and bigger. Does anybody know what that condition is called? That's called a goiter, that's right, because the thyroid gland can't make a competent thyroid hormone because most likely result of lack of iodine in the diet. So this just shows you how some of these hormones can control other endocrine glands. Adrenal corticotropic hormone affects what? Not the adrenal medulla, but the adrenal cortex. Can anybody remember what affects the adrenal medulla? We saw a picture of the adrenal medulla. What went to the adrenal medulla? It was a nerve. It was an example of neuronal control. So there's a nerve that goes to the medulla, but what controls and maintains the adrenal cortex is what? Adrenal corticotropic hormone from the anterior pituitary. And then lastly, the gonads are controlled by follicle stimulating hormone, okay, as well as luteinizing hormone. And that maybe is on the next slide over here, luteinizing hormone, right? So the gonads are the target tissues for LH. And then prolactin, right, is what? The glandular tissue of the breast, right? So it causes development of glandular tissue, but does not cause, right, the secretion. That's controlled by another hormone, right? So prolactin has to be operating in the female before the milk letdown response can actually cause milk ejection from the breast, right? Because prolactin just causes development of glandular tissue in the breast, like during pregnancy and maybe even a little bit during the menstrual cycle. Okay, so that's anterior pituitary. So that leads us to what? We looked at anterior lobe, we should also look at the posterior lobe. And, I don't have them here. Posterior lobe right here. Sorry, you got to skip around. There's only two hormones from the posterior lobe, right? It's structurally part of the brain. And let me find a good slide for the posterior lobe. Okay, so here's a pretty good slide. All right, so here is the hypothalamus. So here is just a nice section of the brain. What kind of section does that look like? What kind of view? It's a lateral view. But what kind of plane describes this the best?
Sagittal.
Yeah, it's a nice sagittal view. And way down here at the base of the brain is the pituitary. Right above it is the hypothalamus. And right above the hypothalamus, go ahead, tell me what the name of this part of the brain is. If this is the hypothalamus right here, this has got to be the, that's got to be the thalamus. So we're going to look at that in a couple weeks, right? So here is the hypothalamus below the thalamus, which is right on top of the pituitary. So here is the infundibulum, once again. We just got done talking about the anterior pituitary. There are blood vessels that take hormones from the hypothalamus down into the anterior pituitary. But now the posterior pituitary is a lot different. It's neuronal tissue. So here are some the cell bodies of neurons, and then here's a really long axon that goes down through the infundibulum, down into the posterior pituitary, and these axons actually release hormones, right, when they become stimulated electrically, and the two hormones that are released from these neurons right here are oxytocin and antidiuretic hormone from the posterior pituitary. All right, so we said that there was a hormone from the anterior pituitary that causes development of glandular tissue of the breast. What was that? That was prolactin, okay? That still doesn't help a nursing infant to nutrition. Milk still has to be ejected from the breast. The hormone that causes contraction of smooth muscle that causes the milk letdown response is called oxytocin. So oxytocin causes the milk letdown response. And this is a nice neuroendocrine reflex. All right, so how does mom know to release milk from the breast? How does that all get started? When a baby starts to nurse or suckle, right, there are receptors, tactile receptors on the nipple and around the nipple, which then send signals to the brain, and that stimulates the hypothalamus. So here is a part of the response loop that starts electrical activity on these neurons down to the posterior pituitary, which release oxytocin. How does oxytocin get to the breast? Because here's a capillary, right? It gets into the cardiovascular system. Oxytocin goes everywhere in the body, but it just so happens that the glandular ducts of the breast have receptors for oxytocin, which cause smooth muscle contraction, which then causes ejection of milk from the breast. So that's a nice neuroendocrine reflex. All right, and now what happens when when a newborn perceives milk on the breast? What happens? Do they fall asleep or do they get interested? They probably suckle more, all right, which what does what? Causes more release of oxytocin. And what happens to the infant then? Probably doesn't fall asleep, goes, ah, nutrition, gets excited more, suckles more, which causes what? More oxytocin. What, did we ever talk about feedback cycles right here? What kind of feedback cycle is that? Okay, that's a nice positive feedback cycle where an increase in oxytocin causes increased suckling, which causes more oxytocin, which causes more suckling, right? Which causes what? More release of milk. And how come the whole world is not just filled up with breast milk? Because this is a positive feedback cycle. Right, as the infant suckles more, causes more oxytocin, causes more milk letdown, which causes more suckling, which causes more milk letdown. How come the whole world is not just filled up with breast milk? Because it's a positive. One causes an increase in the other forever and ever and ever, except what happens? Well, breast eventually runs out of milk, right? So there's just a finite supply, and then what happens to the infant when the breast runs out of milk? Stops nursing, falls asleep, right? And that kind of resets this whole feedback mechanism once again. Okay. So oxytocin from what part of the pituitary gland? The posterior pituitary. There is an additional hormone besides oxytocin, and it's called antidiuretic hormone. And that's pretty easy to understand, because what does a diuretic do? Before you take a physiology or anatomy class, you're probably familiar with what a diuretic does. What does a diuretic do? Makes you pee, right? Makes you produce a lot of volume in urine, right? And then you void that from the urinary bladder because it's got that special kind of epithelium, right? That transitional epithelium. Urinary bladder can stretch. So antidiuretic hormone makes you what? Makes you retain water inside your body. Now, under what circumstances would you want to retain water? When you're dehydrated, right? So antidiuretic hormone prevents water loss when you're in a dehydrated state, maybe from exercising or walking around in the desert, or maybe you're just not replacing fluids like your mom always tells you you should, right? So antidiuretic hormone works on, take a guess, where does antidiuretic hormone work? It works on the kidneys. So it travels to the kidney via the circulatory system from which lobe of the pituitary gland? The posterior lobe right here. Okay, so that's a pretty good view. Oxytocin. All right, so I do want to go over, let's go back up over here. Control of the pituitary gland. So what controls the pituitary gland? All right, so here's a zoomed in cross-section of the brain. We're going to learn some of these structures like the cerebellum and the thalamus. But in particular, we're interested in the hypothalamus. And we see the hypothalamus is connected to the pituitary gland via what kind of tissue? What's the name of this tissue? Right here. It's got a weird name. You would not have heard of this unless you've taken a class. That's the infundibulum. So here's the infundibulum or pituitary stalk that connects the pituitary to the hypothalamus. And notice, hopefully you can see, that the anterior is a different color than the posterior. Yes, you can, even though it's all kind of smushed together with yellow. Right, here's the anterior pituitary. Here's the posterior pituitary. And can you see the sphenoid bone with the nice cella turcica right there that the pituitary gland sits in? That's really nice. All right, so this just shows the lobes, once again, the infundibulum, anterior, posterior, pituitary. All right, some cells. All right. So here we have, all right, the anterior pituitary. We said that the anterior pituitary releases hormones. So these are neurons that release hormones just to this area right here, and then they're picked up by one capillary. And then these capillaries drain into these small blood vessels, which take it to another capillary in the anterior pituitary. And here's that list of hormones that we went over already. All right, so the hormones that are released from the hypothalamus are called releasing hormones, or sometimes they're called releasing factors. So for instance, maybe I'll draw something on the board. Let's see what I can draw on the board and have you see it. That's okay, but hopefully I can do better. All right, so here is hypothalamus. And then connecting to the hypothalamus is the pituitary gland, and you got two parts of the pituitary gland. All right, you've got the anterior pituitary, posterior pituitary. If I use these other markers, I'm going to turn on something that I don't want to turn on. A little bit better. Anterior pituitary, posterior pituitary. And let's just say that the anterior pituitary releases TSH. Who can tell me what TSH is? And where does it? It goes everywhere in the body, but what organ is going to respond to TSH? The thyroid gland, which kind of looks like a butterfly, right? There's a thyroid gland, and it's going to cause the thyroid gland to release thyroid hormone. All right, so how does the anterior pituitary know to release TSH to maintain the thyroid gland? Because the hypothalamus is going to release something called TSHRF, or you could say RH. They're identical to each other. That stands for what? TSH, releasing factor or releasing hormone. How does it get from the hypothalamus to the anterior pituitary? Okay, there is a capillary network here, and then a blood vessel, and then there is a second capillary right here. So TSHRH goes into this capillary, out this capillary, and it stimulates the anterior pituitary to release TSH, right, which then goes to the thyroid gland. All right, let's see, what else do we have? We have adrenal corticotropic hormone released by the anterior pituitary. So ACTH. Where does ACTH go to? The adrenal cortex, right? This is a trophic hormone. What does the adrenal gland look like? Kind of something like a hat, little triangle. And the cortex is what? The superficial layer. So ACTH is going to go to the adrenal cortex. But how does the anterior pituitary know to release ACTH? Because the hypothalamus is going to release something called ACTH what? RF, which goes to the anterior pituitary. Let's do this one more time. Here we have a nice muscle right here, maybe biceps brachii. And the anterior pituitary is going to release something that's going to cause that muscle to grow. What is that called? Growth hormone. All right. But the anterior pituitary can't make up its own mind. It's got to get a signal from the hypothalamus. What's the signal from the hypothalamus that's going to control the release of growth hormone? It's called GH, what? RF. Or you could say RH. Don't care. Different books use different things. Okay, so the hypothalamus is always going to be releasing what? Releasing factors or releasing hormones that cause the release of hormones from the anterior pituitary, but not the posterior pituitary, only the anterior pituitary. All right, so that's pretty easy. What's the hypothalamic hormone that causes the release of TSH? It's going to be TSH, RH. All right, so it's not too complicated. Seems complicated, but it's not too bad. All right, so that's what you see on this slide right here. These neurons release releasing hormones or releasing factors, and they get to the anterior pituitary via the cardiovascular system. Okay, here is the last thing that I want to talk about. Right here, what am I drawing right here? What does that look like? Kind of looks like a thyroid, but think more like red. Think more like Valentine's Day. It's a heart. Not heart. No, heart. Heart. Here's a heart. Okay? The heart, what's the job of the heart? It pumps blood. So the heart pumps blood out. Right? Any vessel that's taking blood away from the heart is called an artery. And any blood vessel that's bringing blood back to the heart is called a vein. But there is a special blood vessel between arteries and veins that we call capillaries. And I'll just kind of illustrate it like this as a capillary. So here's a capillary. Things can enter and leave your circulatory system only through capillaries. Cannot get in and out via an artery, can't get in and out via vein, certainly cannot get in and out in the heart right here. So things can only enter or leave via this capillary. So this is a typical kind of circulatory system by structure. So how many capillary beds do you see between an artery and a vein? On this typical, I just see one. And in most cases in your body, that is very true. There's only a couple that are special. And I want to show you a special one. I don't want to redraw it because I'm kind of running out of board. So I'm going to leave the vein. I'm going to leave the artery. All right, so here is an artery. An artery is what? Taking blood away from the heart. Here is a capillary bed over here. And then there's a blood vessel, and it connects to, look, what is this right here? Don't say heart. That looks like this thing over here, another capillary bed. So here is capillary number one, here is capillary number two, right? So in this special kind of circulatory system, you have artery taking blood away from the heart, going to a capillary. Now what can happen at this capillary? Things can move in or out, capillary bed, and then it recoalesces into this blood vessel, takes it to a second capillary, and what can happen here? Things can move in and out, and then it goes back to the heart. This segment between the two capillaries right here is called a portal blood vessel. That's a portal blood vessel. And it's kind of special. You only have maybe three or four places in your body where that happens. And this is what? A special delivery system where things here enter the blood and they're delivered exactly here. Not all over your body, but it goes through this capillary bed first. And that's what we see on this JPEG. We see a portal system for the anterior pituitary. Hormones are released, or releasing factors are released by the hypothalamus. They're picked up by this first capillary bed. Then these capillaries converge into these blood vessels right here, which carry it through the infundibulum. These are what we call what? Portal vessels, the hypophyseal portal veins, which then take it to, what does this look like down here in the anterior pituitary? Another capillary network. So here's capillary bed number one. Here's the portal vessel through the infundibulum, and then here is capillary bed number two in the anterior pituitary. So that's how hormones get from the hypothalamus to the anterior pituitary. It's via this hypophyseal portal vein going through the infundibulum. All right, so that's a little bit of an advanced concept, but it's really crucial. Let's contrast that with what we see for the posterior pituitary. All right, we said that these neurons from the hypothalamus, from these two different spots, right, actually move down through the infundibulum as an intact cell. So they carry electrical impulses down to the terminus of these axons right here. And these axons release hormones directly into this capillary bed, which then takes it everywhere in the body. So for the posterior pituitary, you don't need a portal system because these neurons go all the way down into the posterior pituitary. They directly release their hormones, right, around these capillaries, which then pick it up and take it everywhere in the body. So this thing right here is called the hypothalamic, standing for hypothalamus, hypophyseal. Hypophysis is another name for pituitary gland, and this is a tract. So this is the hypothalamic hypophyseal tract, which is carrying hormones down directly from the hypothalamus down into the posterior pituitary. So the mode of release from anterior and posterior pituitary is different, right, depending on which it is. But remember, the posterior pituitary is really an extension of the brain, but the anterior pituitary is of different origin. It's actually from epithelial tissue. So you would probably expect for it to be controlled differently, all right, even though the hypothalamus controls both of them. All right, so both of those were, I think, pretty good exam figures. All right, so this one right here just shows you the anterior pituitary, the portal vessel. This one over here shows you the posterior pituitary being controlled by the hypothalamic hypophyseal tract. All right, so in this name right here, hypothalamic, what does that refer to in this name? Hypothalamic refers to the hypothalamus. And what does hypophyseal refer to? Another name for the pituitary gland is the hypophysis. Okay, and since these are nerve axons, this is a tract right here. All right, so you got portal system for the anterior pituitary, the tract for the posterior pituitary. Portal system for anterior, tract for posterior pituitary. All right, so we talked about releasing hormones. All right, the primary capillary plexus This is up in the hypothalamus. The secondary capillary plexus is in the anterior pituitary. All right, so guess what? We're done with pituitary gland. Thyroid gland, located in the anterior neck. You can palpate it pretty easily. It's the largest pure endocrine gland. It has no exocrine functions whatsoever. It doesn't contract, so it's not for motility at all. Produces two different kinds of hormones, okay, depending on the tissues themselves. All right, so here is your, here's part of your voice box. We haven't talked about this yet, but it's called the larynx. And just below to that major prominent cartilage right there is the thyroid gland, kind of shaped like a butterfly. We got a couple different kinds of cells. We got some cells that make these follicles or these circular structures. These are filled with thyroid hormone. And then we have some other cells that secrete another hormone called calcitonin. Let's see what we got right here. Okay. Let me go back to this one right here. So the thyroid gland secretes thyroid hormone, which helps control metabolism. It also helps control growth in our body. It's stimulated by a hormone from the anterior pituitary. What stimulates the growth and secretion of thyroid hormone? From the anterior pituitary. Anterior pituitary hormone that causes, that maintains the thyroid hormone. Excuse me. Is what? Thyroid-stimulating hormone? Thyroid-stimulating hormone stimulates the thyroid to release thyroid hormone. But there is another hormone made by some cells of the thyroid called calcitonin. Calcitonin is a hormone that works with parathyroid hormone. We talked about parathyroid hormone a little bit, but let's talk about it. If we look at the posterior side of the thyroid gland, here are the parathyroid glands. Remember, what does parathyroid hormone do? It helps dissolve bones by doing what? It raises blood calcium. So parathyroid hormone raises blood calcium. But what's an overall important concept in anatomy as well as physiology in terms of control mechanisms? Or even your car. Antagonistic control, right? Like biceps brachii, triceps brachii. If there's a hormone that causes an increase in blood calcium, would you expect to have a hormone that decreases blood calcium? Yeah, so that you have precise control of blood calcium levels. Because you don't want to dissolve your bones away, but you got to have the right levels for muscle contraction. All right, so parathyroid hormone from the parathyroid gland causes an increase in blood calcium, but calcitonin from the thyroid gland right here causes a decrease in blood calcium, so that will help build bones up, for instance. So calcitonin and parathyroid hormone are antagonistic to each other, but is that a good thing or a bad thing? Antagonism in terms of control systems are good. Think of what? The gas pedal and your brake pedal on your car, both working together to maintain balance and precise control of your automobile. Okay, so those are the parathyroid glands, kind of embedded in the thyroid gland. All right, so don't forget, parathyroid increases blood calcium, calcitonin decreases blood calcium concentration. Okay, adrenal glands. There are two parts. You've got the adrenal medulla and the adrenal cortex. See if I have a picture somewhere in here. Maybe I have a picture. Pretty good picture. All right, so here is an illustration. Here is a kidney producing urine. It's going to flow through this little ureter right here, sitting on top of the kidney, so I can see it. In the posterior wall of your abdominal cavity is the adrenal gland, and you can see the superficial layer, and it's different than the deep layer. The deep layer is what we call the medulla, but of course we're interested in the cortex right here. I don't think I'm going to have you know the different layers of the cortex, but you should at least know where the cortex is. Okay, the adrenal cortex secretes molecules that are based on cholesterol, and cholesterol is a fatty kind of material, so that's why we call these lipid-based hormones that are called steroid hormones, right? Corticosteroids. Where does a corticosteroid get secreted from? A corticosteroid from, it's in the name, the adrenal cortex, because that's part of the name, right? So a corticosteroid is a steroid hormone released from the adrenal cortex. We've got two main classes of hormones, mineralocorticoids and glucocorticoids. Guess what kind of metabolism a glucocorticoid controls? Sugar. And a mineralocorticoid controls minerals in your body. Can you give me an example of some minerals? Like sodium, potassium. These again are what we call ions or electrolytes. All right, so two main classes of hormones. A good example of a mineralocorticoid is aldosterone. Right, it helps maintain blood pressure because it controls blood volume by regulating sodium in your body. Probably you all have heard of one way to control high blood pressure is to do what in terms of mineral control? As a matter of fact, how about diet? By reducing salt in your diet is a way to reduce high blood pressure. Okay? And so aldosterone is involved in that. Glucocorticoids, cortisol is a good example, cortisol is a good example of that, is released under stressful circumstances, which increases blood glucose in your body, which then theoretically helps you deal with stressful circumstances because it's an energy molecule. All right, those are from the adrenal cortex. Adrenal medulla, we've actually talked about already, right? Those release adrenaline or epinephrine or noradrenaline or norepinephrine, again, under what? Very stressful circumstances, right? And it's controlled by the sympathetic nervous system, which we're going to get to next week. All right, so that's the adrenal gland. Pineal gland. Let's see where that pineal gland is. We're still learning a lot about the pineal gland. Okay. I only have a slide of that from at the very beginning of the chapter. That's okay, because now you at least know where the pituitary gland is. So here's the pituitary gland. The pineal gland is way over here. Oh, maybe I do have another slide of it. Close your eyes a second. Let me flip through these slides quickly. Okay, here is the sphenoid bone with the pituitary. What's another name for pituitary gland? I should actually make everybody say that before you can leave class. What's another name for pituitary? Hypophysis. Hypophysis is another name for pituitary. All right, and the pineal gland is way back over here. Here's the pineal gland. Or you could say pineal body, either one. All right, so it secretes melatonin, a hormone that helps regulate circadian rhythms. Does anybody know what a circadian rhythm is? Do you guys have rhythms? Probably, yeah. Like some people are more morning people, some are more evening people. All right, circadian rhythm is just a daily rhythm of activity that you exhibit. So when typically do you wake up? When do you wake up? 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock? Well, what? You should wake up when the sun comes up right in the morning, and then you fall asleep at night, right? So melatonin is involved in these wakeful and then sleepful states in your life, but other kinds of activities as well, right? It might even be involved to some degree in reproductive behavior in people, right? And for certainly in lower organisms, it is. In other organisms, it's very superficial. It's up against cranial bones, right? And it's actually sensitive to light. And so it's very important in terms of understanding when days are very long as opposed to when they're very short. And typically, when do most animals go into a fertility period? Is when the days are getting really short or when the days are getting long? long in the springtime, because that's when there's going to be resources available. That's when water is available typically in the spring, and other kinds of seeds and things like that for eating. All right, so pineal gland and other animals is important. Okay, pancreas. We got to talk about pancreas. We'll start there next time. The sign-in sheet is going around somewhere. Yeah, so make sure you sign that sign-in sheet. And I'll see you guys upstairs. Yeah. So don't forget about calcitonin and parathyroid hormone. What's the relationship between calcitonin and parathyroid hormone? They're antagonists. That's right. Sorry for beating you over the head with that. But we're going to look at a couple more hormones too. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, so on the 26th, we have my lab day has a practicum.
Yeah.
I also have a background appointment that day, so I was wondering for a job.
Yeah.
I was wondering if it would be possible for me to take it on that Monday.
Can you give me any kind of support for your...
Yeah, I can bring you in like a package.
Your letter of introduction saying we would like you to come in. Yeah, and you got to take it that week.
Okay, yeah. Can I take it that Monday with the other lab?
Yeah. As long as you don't share any secrets on what's on the test.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Thanks a lot.
Okay.
I'll bring in the...
Yeah, really good. And remind me again.
Yeah, I definitely will.
Okay, thanks.
Do you want me to send you an email or...?
Nah, just remind me again.
Okay. I'll
really good.
Online.
Good. Thanks, Jeremy. Yeah. Yeah.
MSH,
melanocyte stimulating hormone.
Is that good for male body?
Oh, look, I got some stuff for eBay. It was in here when you walked in?
No, someone...
Just now left it.
Yeah. I'm not know who it was, though.
Yeah, I don't know either. Okay, doesn't say. Thanks for letting me know. Melanocyte stimulating hormone.
Is this the male gland or male body?
Yeah. It does stimulate it. It stimulates other cells as well. You know, we're just not exactly sure. Yeah, it's not exactly sure. I think that MSH kind of gets turned on later on in life, and we think that MSH actually deactivates the pineal gland, which then causes puberty. So somehow the pineal gland represses gonads. I mean, this is all just, this is not theory. This is just kind of wild hypothesis.
Pineal body gets stimulated by lice or control
it? It can. In certain animals it can. Like reptiles, definitely. Birds, definitely. Mammals. You know, people have written all kinds of interesting papers on that, because certain peoples that live really high in latitudes, like Eskimos and stuff, they definitely go through a reproductive season. Like, and they have like all kinds of ceremonies and parties, sex parties in the springtime and things like that. And they think that there is an association with the pineal gland, but no one's ever been able to prove it scientifically.
So how is pineal body stimulated by it? In terms of the humoral or the mono?
Well, if it's light, it's got to be through photoreceptors in the eyes. Yeah, because it's so deep in the brain. But in other organisms, it's not. It has photoreceptors of its own. Right there. And you know, melanin is a pigment, so which is what it's sensitive to light at a molecular level. So, and it's a neuronal kind of tissue.
Can we remove that? Can we do without the pineal
body? After puberty, I think you can. It might disrupt your sleep cycles a little bit, but you can probably compensate for that. But since you know, it's neuronal tissue, that's why melanomas are so dangerous, because they're actually neuronal cells that have moved. Their basic nature is migratory, so they've moved from the nervous system to the skin to produce that pigment. And so whenever you lose control of melanocytes, they just go nuts. They just travel all over the place, because that's their basic nature.
Right.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
It's all sort of interesting, but a lot of conjecture as to what's happening there. But it'd be interesting to know some other approaches to that thinking.
I've been insomnia, that's the
thing that gets messed up when you go to school.
Yeah, right.
Okay, see you Wednesday.
Okay, bye. See you upstairs.
I was just wondering.
Yes.
For Goiter,
It's more, I think, bilateral. It's more symmetrical, goiter.